We present the News Quiz of the Year with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz of the Year. We begin, as ever, with some cuttings.
The only captive-bred panda to be released into the wild has disappeared in China. Experts believe Zhang Zhang was hurt in a brawl with a rival, and vets hope to find him in time to treat his injuries, which apparently include two black eyes.
12:05 a.m, eunuchs, an insight into castration. 1:05 a.m, The Sopranos.
The founder of the famous Morelli ice cream brand in Port Stewart, Angelo Morelli, has died. He was 99.
Welsh tortoise recaptured 1.8 miles from home after 8 months on the run.
And thank you all for those. Now, as it's the festive season, let's begin with Britain's longest-running parliamentary pantomime. Despite his best efforts to deny that the clock had struck midnight, Cinder Blair's beautiful, shiny carriage turned back into a messy war in Iraq and collapsing public services. Ignoring the muted cries of "He's behind you," Cinder Blair was finally done away with by Widow Cranky and his sidekick Prudence, which allowed David Cameron to beat off all his remaining rivals and become Britain's top Tony Blair impersonator. Andy, who is going any minute now, definitely going. No, honest to God, he's really going.
It's the boy Blair.
The boy Blair.
I was thinking the other day, you know when he said, "I feel the hand of history on my shoulder," do you think it was trying to arrest him?
It's not where he feels it now. That's more likely the knee of destiny is feeling it.
Yeah, Blair is going. I don't know, is there a leaving card going round Downing Street? You know, with lots of slightly self-conscious, you know, "I thought you'd never go," brackets, ha ha, Gordon. I don't know. There's a great quote on Today programme, Neil Kinnock. He said, "When I think of Tony Blair, I automatically think of one word." And I thought, well, we all do that.
Mark, which clunking fist has won hands down?
Is this Brown?
That's the man.
Yes. Yes, this is genius, really, with the Labour Party, because they can find nobody at all to dispute this chap who's now going to take over. And then, so they say, oh, yes, but we are going to have a contest for the deputy leader. But then they've managed to find six people, no other institution we've had to do this, to find six people who all agree that the Iraq War was a good thing and Tony Blair is a good bloke. Which I don't think any other organisation would be able to do that. And so they've now got this meaningless sort of election where they're all, one of them, I think, I can't remember, they all get sort of all seem the same. One of them said, "I want to win because we need to renew the trust of the British people." And then another one said, "I want to win because we need to listen to the people." And I thought then Peter Hain will make his speech, it'll be, "I think that the British people are people." And then Alan Johnston will go, "Ooh, I like people." And then the contest, they'll all stand in a room and all shout "people," and the one who's loudest is the winner.
Actually, I was thinking about, because Alan Johnston's the bookie's favourite, isn't he?
I've no idea, I have no interest, they're all arseholes.
It's funny, I read that in Tribune this week. Kind of weird.
It's what bothers me about the nature of polls, because polls this week are being 1 or 2 or 3%, and I don't know who is selected, but it's odd that if you come here and say they're all arseholes, 500 people agree with you. This is an extraordinarily strange way of testing. You know,
well, I did put the
mood.
Argument very well.
It's how you, Gov, do it. I like the idea, though, that it's OK because there's going to be a contest over the deputy leadership, because that's such a role of such importance, like it was under Prescott.
Francis, whose blue routine lasted over an hour?
Well, it's all about the Tory conference, isn't it?
It is.
And Dave, who, unlike Gerald Ford, he can actually walk and talk at the same time. And this is thought to be so extraordinary. There are all these reports of Cameron's speech saying a virtuoso performance. This man can actually speak without an auto-cue. I mean, you go to any school play, you see people speaking without an auto-cue. It's not that difficult. You just learn your lines. And it's all election fever, and the Tories are getting hyped up. I think perhaps rather overhyped, it has to be said, because there was a headline across the front of The Guardian on Thursday, and it said, "Revealed, anatomy of the Tory war machine." And it was just a floor plan of their office in London, showing where all the desks were and where David Cameron sat and where Michael Ashcroft sat and that sort of thing. And then there was one in the Mail the previous day, huge headline saying, "Tories unleash the attack dogs." And there's still a bit of reference to George Osborne. Doesn't anyone look less like an attack dog? He actually looks like the bastard love child of Piers Morgan and Mr. Bean. But anyway, they liked Osborne, they liked Cameron, and they loved Osborne. I've covered Tory conferences in the past. And the one thing you can say for certain is that about 10% of the delegates are actually dead, clinically dead. And they were snoozing away or mouldering away, and suddenly he said the magic phrase, death duties, and they all sat up and said hurrah.
I think the Tory faithful are just looking forward to the election because after it they get to have a new leader. But he said this thing about the election. He said, we will fight and Britain will win. I thought, well, of course Britain's going to win. We're the only people taking part in the election.
It made me think of Leon Britton, and I thought I didn't remember he was standing.
I was reading that one of Cameron's tricks to do such a fantastic speech is that he doesn't go to the toilet before he goes on stage. Puts a new meaning on the fact when he said, well, this is me, no notes, it might be messy, but it'll be me.
Well, it explains why he looked full of something. Gary, for heaven's sake, sit up straight, girl. Put your tie on properly. You're a quiz show panellist, not an urban gorilla. Now then.
Mother?
Who got shirty with the kids this week?
David Cameron.
Yeah, was it?
It's Tory education policy, and David Cameron's done it again. He's been putting his political career on the line a lot the last couple of weeks. A week or two ago, he came out and said he thought rape was a bad thing. Extraordinary. And this week, he's once again put his head above the parapet and said that it might be a good idea if schools taught children things. Like reading. He also said that schools should be much bigger on discipline and uniforms should be smarter and there should be prefects and head boys and girls at schools. So basically he's saying, why can't everywhere be like Eton? It was brilliant. We had tailcoats and sponge bag trousers and servants and we were all worth millions. And the world would be a better place if everyone was more like that. Is the same. And now I'm off to the drones because Barmy Fungy Phipps is having a hell of a time. It's essentially his education policy.
He said he thought that getting children to tuck their shirts in was the best way to get them to pull their socks up. And I thought, well,
certainly makes it a lot more fun if you do it all in one move that way.
You'd have to have very strange suspenders, I think. Labour and the Conservatives getting a friendly, happy slapping there. In the interests of fairness and impartiality, we must point out that the Lib Dems failed to do anything funny this year. The news is a fast-moving beast, and sometimes on News Quiz we can't keep up, particularly when the story we're discussing hasn't even happened yet. Now, Fred, your first question, I mean, obviously it's the big news story. I'm not even going to try and make it too cryptic. What we want you to do is just spend a minute or two giving us your reaction in depth to the results of the local elections, which which came out today, Friday, May the 4th. Or in fact, yesterday, if you're listening to the repeat. It's the big story.
Well, what an election it was.
Yes.
I mean, some people voted the same as they did last time. Lots of people voted for parties they didn't vote for the last time, and lots of people didn't vote at all. And there were those that didn't vote the last time that voted this time and voted for the party that they would have not voted for last time had they voted.
What effect do you think it's going to have on the country?
A lot of people predicted this outcome. And they've been proved right. It's exactly what happened.
What about Scotland? I mean, that was interesting.
Scotland was interesting. Yeah. In the 15th century, it was interesting.
It was neck and neck all the way through the campaign. SNP, slightly bigger neck than Labour, but their neck was getting bigger, and a lot of folk thought that with a late surge, they could retain power. And I think you have to agree, Sandy, some of the people that have been predicting the outcome up there are looking pretty silly now.
I guess they must be wishing they could go back in time, you know, to say Thursday evening. Fred there giving us the sort of in-depth political analysis that makes the BBC the envy of the world. Speaking of the world, Britain didn't escape a visit from one of the more embarrassing friends that it's made on its arms-dealing holidays. Over at Buckingham Palace, the red carpet was rolled out, the corgis were washed and blow-dried, and any junior royals involved in blackmailing plots were firmly locked up in a downstairs cupboard without the benefit of a footman to tend to their needs. Fred, who deserted the desert for dessert with the Queen?
It's the state visit of King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, who's been here this week at a banquet at one of the staterooms at Buckingham Palace, which was attended by dignitaries and many senior royals, but few junior royals.
Just be very careful. That's
otherwise engaged. Is that okay?
Yes, no, that's fine.
But good. And they discussed the things that Saudi Arabia and Britain have in common. Delivery notes, invoices, remittance advices, and statements of account.
He said he'd brought a handful of wives, and I simply, for the life of me, couldn't think how many that might be.
Could be none.
Well, a lot of men would say it was one, wouldn't it? That would be a handful. How many is a handful?
Well, you know, the ladies, Sandy, they're always a handful.
Well, as a matter of fact, I do, but there we are.
I think it's appalling the way the Saudis have brought the arms industry into disrepute by involving corruption. A once noble occupation has been tainted by sleaze. And it's remarkable. I mean, domestic Muslims get constantly lambasted and attacked for being a bit Islamic, saying, oh, look at them with their veils, and politicians saying, oh, take your veils off. Saudi Arabia, our big mate. I mean, women aren't allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia. I mean, I don't see what the logic of that is, because if you're wearing a burqa, you're not going to be applying lipstick, are you? I mean, you'd see why Western women would be told not to drive, or at least have their makeup confiscated before they start the engine.
The only place, really, in the world, women in Saudi Arabia are the only people who don't get punished extra for drinking and driving, because they get executed for either, so they might as well do both at the same time.
I like the fact that we were told that Gordon Brown avoided discussing human rights when he met the king. He must have had a list of subjects as long as your arm. Things are, well, but not mention that, or BAE, no, but not mention that, or slush funds.
I thought at one point what they were going to do, because they were going so overboard in trying to make him feel at home, I thought to make him feel extra much at home, what they might do is hang a couple of adulteresses by Buckingham Palace, and Gordon Brown could say, and these have been specially selected by the cabinet, that one by a Mr. Blunkett, and that one... and that one by Mr. Prescott.
Frederick, who is accused of arming its customers with a princely sum?
Is this Saudi Arabia?
It is, yeah.
One of our... Can we name them? Is it?
You can say what you like.
BAE, who make warplanes, which sounds like an old Geordie joke. Did they have warplanes? Why, no, I think they had their own. And I know, and I'm going to trust Jeremy to give us the moral argument about government-approved corruption, but for me, this story is all about accounting irregularities, because somebody somewhere has been knocking 30 million quid into an account every quarter. That's 120 million a year. And somebody else has come along and audited this and said that it's okay to go, and the Inland Revenue have allowed it as an expense. I can't even get my gardener's wages through my books. My kids' school fees only go through as research and development. I occasionally get the odd T-shirt through if I've got the receipt.
You have a gardener?
A gardener, yes.
Do you?
Yeah, well, the other one resigned, so it's just...
But it's Prince Bandar who's got it all in his back pocket. Mm. And he's quite extraordinary that... I mean, it was a great week for cynicism and naivete. I'd assumed that we'd gone into Iraq. One of the tiny reasons in the small print at the bottom of the page was to impose democracy. But we're very happy to sit down with this bastard from Saudi Arabia, slip him £1 billion to sell him arms, and not bother at all about the nature of the government in Saudi Arabia. Why don't we go into Saudi Arabia and impose democracy? Because they've got all the guns we would use because we sold them to them.
Yeah, but...
Mind you, that was true of Iraq as well.
Fred,
yes.
You know you mentioned your children's school fees.
Yes.
Education's free. You really ought to ring the head about that. Under the 1945 Education Act, someone's taken you for a ride, you know. You get charged for going in the playground as well.
Are you paying for the gardener's children as well?
No. Well, not that I know of. Two of them do look very like him.
You're sending... I didn't know. This is completely new to me. You're sending children to a Scottish public school. You're breeding prime ministers. Beyond the border.
I thought if you were posh from Scotland. You spoke like that. I thought you spoke with an English accent if you were posh Scottish.
Yes, they do. I'm not posh Scottish.
But a gardener, you're sending your children to private school.
I'm rich. I'm not posh.
All right. Armando, what's the big bother? And be quick.
Jade Goody, or whatever her name is. Channel 4 says she's not being racist. Mm. Which, if you listen to what she said, because I think what she actually said was... which is not racist.
Yes. I sort of blame the BBC, really. I mean, 30 years ago, they came up with this idea of convening five socially disparate ignoramuses in a basement without any windows to have a go at one another. And this is where we still are. The trouble is, because they didn't bring in voting, I'm still here and can't get up.
In India, it said on the news, they're burning effigies of the producers.
Yes.
And where did they get effigies of Peter Bazalgette in New Delhi all of a sudden?
Big Brother has always been the most fantastically cynical show. And from the very beginning, their main line of defence for the programme is that somehow it mirrors Britain. Yeah. But that can't be true, because if Big Brother was an accurate mirror of British society, that would mean that 98% of us were pig ignorant. And 87% of us were irritatingly camp.
I think they should actually vote out the producers, and then just people could do it on an ad hoc basis. So I'd be perfectly happy to produce Big Brother for a couple of days. Dear 14, and the house is suddenly filled with wasps.
Phil, who's been having some right royal bird trouble this week?
Ah. This would be the Titian-haired, problem-drinking, cannabis-experimenting, paparazzi magnet and shotgun owner, Prince Harry.
Sorry, two seconds, Phil. Allegedly.
A number of people, members of the public, a wildlife warden, saw two hen harriers being shot down in the Sandringham area of Norfolk, and... Prince Harry was out shooting with some mate of his, Hertz van der Rentel or something. And he has been questioned by the Norfolk Constabulary. And I think the questioning went, "Are you signing this for me?" Sign me arm, it's not for me. He's been questioned because it is, as you so rightly point out, alleged that him and his buddy, they were out shooting and they shot some hen harriers.
That was a suggestion. Mm. We don't know that they did.
Well,
I'm just covering your ass in case they try and sue.
To be fair, the both of them said they had no knowledge of the incident. But, I mean, that is cannabis for you. Mark, who's overworked, overproductive and, luckily, over here?
Foreign people.
Foreign people. And 2 points to Mark Steele.
I'd say that's the case, yeah, because, of course, against the normal argument that is put forward, which is that, oh, you see, immigrants come over here and it makes us worse off because it means that we've all got to share things out. And
well, they get to chair the news quiz and things like that, which...
I think it's fair enough. I think foreigners doing all those jobs the British don't want to do. You know, sweep the streets, pick vegetables, sleep with Prince Philip. I think it's fair enough.
I did have a taxi driver who complained, saying, "Well, it's not right. I come over here, I can't speak the Queen. They got no skills and they're taking our jobs away." And you're saying, "Well, so you're saying that someone who can't speak your language and is less skilled than you is better than you at your job?" It doesn't reflect well on him.
Did he ask you to get out of the cab then?
Yeah. Actually, I more thought that than said it. I've got some convictions, but it was raining.
I got in an argument in a pub with a bloke a little while ago who said, "I'll tell you what is with these Kosovans, right, is that they come over here and they undercut our decent British builders' bloody rates because they're prepared to work for less. That's what they do." I said, "Oh, I don't think that's true." He says, "It bloody is, mate, because I own a building firm and I employ them."
Carrie, which logo should be no-go?
It's the 2012 Olympics logo, isn't it? God help us. Which everyone hates. Quite rightly.
Lord Coe likes it.
He does, but he doesn't count. I mean, it is just appalling. And the fact that part of the brief was it has to be street meant it was going to be awful. The politicians using a word like street.
Is that not with it these days?
I think that's the problem. It is hip to the beat, Daddy. But if you're over the age of 19, it's so curling. And it really does look like... Well, I mean, it's the design equivalent of your parents dancing at a wedding. It's just ghastly.
I saw it in a newspaper, first of all, and honest to goodness, I wasn't paying attention. I thought it was the puzzle page. I spent half an hour trying to solve it.
But they kept using the word street, and then they started talking about branding. And, you know, branding is a word from Satan's own dictionary. And it just went on and on. It's a strong brand. And it's not a bland brand. I can't believe they had the gall to say that. You know, we don't do bland, said Sebastian Coe.
We at the News Quiz like to think we have a strong brand. It's the brand of vodka we use to lure the panellists onto the show. I'm joking, of course. We always drink gin. But you do have to be careful what you say about brand names. You don't want to get big business into a flap. Simon, who is asking, do you want lawsuits with that?
This is the really faintly ridiculous story that a pub, one of many which claims to be the highest in the country, altitude-wise, is being sued by Kentucky Fried Chicken because they have an item on their menu called the Family Feast, which you would have thought was a fairly generic sort of description, but apparently Kentucky Fried Chicken have successfully bought the copyright on that term, and their lawyers are watching. And so this pub, which only served the Family Feast at Christmas time, are being asked to change the name. And I do have some sympathy with the Kentucky Fried Chicken as an organisation protecting their names, because you only have to wander up and down Stoke Newington High Street to see all these Louisiana fried cat's meat and, you know, deep-fried southern racist chicken barrage of Ku Klux Cluckers or whatever they're called. There are a lot of Me Too-type organisations trying to cash in on the undeniably delicious secret blend of spices. But I think
blend
in this
of spices.
Case... Yes.
I'm sorry, but fat is not a spice.
Well, there's a feminist tome waiting to be written, isn't it? Anyway, yes, and they're thinking, the lawyers have offered to act for them free of charge, and I can't remember what they're called. It's not the Cat and the Fiddle, is it? But it's one of those.
Tamhill Inn.
Like that. There's this woman who runs, it's in the middle of nowhere, on a rock outcrop in the Pennines, and she got this from, I think you should name and shame these lawyers. It's a man called Mr. Pratt of Freshfields in London, top city lawyers, yes, who sent her a letter saying, we noticed that once a year on Christmas Day you advertise Family Feasts, a bit of turkey with all the trimmings. And by law, a Family Feast can only refer to a cardboard bucket full of Colonel Sanders's disgusting products and a large free bottle of fizzy pop of some kind. Anything else is illegal.
At the Tan Hill Inn, a pub on an unclassified road in the middle of moorland, 4 miles outside a tiny North Yorkshire hamlet, is being sued by KFC for infringement of their trademark for advertising their one-day-a-year Christmas lunch as a family feast. And in case anybody gets confused, the pub meal consists of a traditional Christmas dinner with all the trimmings and Christmas pudding, while the KFC family feast is a bucket of fried chicken, chips, coleslaws, potato gravy and a fizzy drink. I think when you've eaten that, the bucket comes in rather handy. Why does a Mars a day make you work, rest and moo?
Mars bars are no longer vegetarian. Yeah. I'd never really thought about their vegetarianism. But they have whey in them, which previously had vegetarian ingredients and now has rennet, which is taken from the stomach of newly slaughtered calves.
I just say we're obliged legally to tell you this in no way alters its delicious creamy taste.
See, you know, the Milky Way is now the snack you can eat between meals without ruining your appetite, unless you think about how it was made. But there was a lovely thing. One of the spokeswomen for the Mars company said that less strict vegetarians can still enjoy the great taste of Mars. You think about the less strict vegetarians who eat animals.
So you see, what they can do is like a Milky Way. It's just they just have to change the spelling.
Do you know, that's almost too clever for this show. I had to think, that's clever. there's a surprising number of sweets and fizzy drinks and crisps and things like that.
Yeah, the Guardian listed them, didn't they? It was Guinness, Tango Orange and steak. It was weird.
Who queued for hours to bag a bargain?
Sainsbury's people, they went to buy this 5 quid non-plastic bag. And it says on the side, just for the benefit of short-sighted people, it's not a plastic bag.
But it says, I'm not a plastic bag.
I'm not a plastic bag.
And on the other side it says, but I am a pretentious
fashion. It has a personality then. It uses the first person singular, this bag, does it?
Yes, it's a personal bag.
You know a hell of a lot about Sainsbury's. I've never been in Sainsbury's. The only thing I can think about Sainsbury's, they keep the riffraff out of Waitrose.
Alan, what is no longer hair today, gone tomorrow?
It's terrifying knowing that you will always get a question on the news quiz that you can answer because the audience is shielding its eyes from your head. They have, I think of them as they, it's Dr. Savannah in the basement with a condenser and a mouse. They got a bald mouse. They clunk-fisted it. And as a result of this, the genes that they'd shoved in from a goldfish or whatever it was, and the mouse cropped a fine head of hair, mullet, ringlets, to go with the ear on its back. It doesn't seem to have any therapeutic side effect either. I mean, there's no reason for doing this except to see whether you can do it. It's like saying we could have webbed feet. In fact, I'd rather have webbed feet than hair. I'd rather enjoy that if they could do that, to introduce a Canadian Brent Goose gene into my body and I could get across the Serpentine in 4 minutes flat. I wouldn't mind being bald as a coot. I'd be faster than a coot as well, if I have smaller feet. But, yes, that's what they've done. They've invented mouse hair you can put on human beings.
I'm hoping for a handlebar moustache. That's what I'm after. But I quite like the fact that stem cell research is supposed to cure cancer and cystic fibrosis and all this stuff, and clearly some bald scientist has harnessed the technology first.
I want to know whether the mouse ended up with air in its nostrils. This is something that happens after the watershed of 48. You suddenly find that you're growing these two tiny beards in these caverns in the middle of your head. Blow your nose and sort of tugging feeling. Tiny hawsers that catch in the edge of your handkerchief where it's hemmed.
You want to get...
You look down and find a hair in your monogram.
And they talk about intelligent design. If they're listening to this, maybe they'll get the mice and try to put a handlebar moustache, see if the mice can grow that. First World War military mice.
Can I agree with you, Carrie?
Little baddie mice. I think the cheese is mined right.
The laboratory needs you.
Maybe you could just stick a hairy mouse to the top of your lip. I quite like it.
You mean like Bruce Forsyth?
Alan, which beach bums thought their ship had come in?
It's the Napoli, is the boat. I've forgotten the name of the beach. It's in Dorset.
It's Branscombe Beach. Branscombe
Beach. There's huge confusion here because there's a long chain of not being able to arrest these people. The police said they didn't have the resources. But basically, I think it was John Reed on a mobile phone saying, for Christ's sake, let the buggers go. We haven't got a chokey to put them after me in, especially if they're riding a motorbike and carrying a big crate.
15 BMW motorbikes. They were taken away by, the police said, taken away by an organised gang. And you thought, what, did they drive away in a pyramid formation?
It must remain something of a German dream to have 15 BMWs land on a beach and then manage to get inland. They've worked for it so hard.
Didn't know so much stuff was still sent by barrel.
I think the ship was importing barrels from some barrel-making colony that we own. But there was nothing in it. Completely empty.
It's terrible when a ship full of empty barrels can sink. It should be the most buoyant ship in the world.
Yes. I was very uneasy seeing the Terracotta Army is coming here. The Chinese are sending us the Terracotta Army. And we haven't heard of the wooden horse, because we don't teach history. These buggers are going to have Chinese in them. All our lads are in Iraq. And we're going to hear this tapping noise in the middle of the night outside the V&A. Chinese paratroopers will be all over South London.
How big do you think these terracotta soldiers are, Alan?
They don't have to be very big. Are they very big? Have you seen
they're
them?
They're not big enough to have whole troops.
We're not getting
there's
the
only one man. Only need one bloke in it.
Do you know what?
One bloke with a temper.
My fear is that when this goes out, there's a listener at work in the Chinese embassy thinking it might just work.
We're pleased to report that the Terracotta Army have remained silent. so far. Meanwhile, the US military machine in Iraq was still trying to win the war that President Bush had said it had won 3 years ago. Matters weren't helped by soldiers increasingly going off message, or, as we like to call it, telling the truth. Alan, which war hero claims her reputation was lynched?
This is Private Lynch. It's extremely sad, really, because it proves that the American military occasionally fibs. Those who are old enough to remember Iwo Jima and know that the flag never went up that way, and the unfortunate Native American who was forced to put it up because it would be good for public relations and subsequently became an alcoholic, and indeed Burt Lancaster, will know that the Americans tend to lie about some of their... I mean, they're not to say they're not enormously brave people, but they're not the ones that get into the papers. A lot of blokes died out there, and there was this girl who was rather attractive, and the Pentagon thought, what a very good idea, we will have a heroine. She could have taken out 400 of the Iraqis, knocked out a couple of tanks, and we'll give her the Congressional Medal of Honor. Unfortunately, she was lying at the bottom of a personnel carrier at the time and didn't take any part in the action. And the hospital from which she was released by Marines going in like gangbusters tried to give her to the Marines before they went in and stormed it. They said, we've got this patient here, she's a bit nervous, and would you take her off our hands? They said, no, we're going to storm you, it's what we do. We are the 7th Cavalry. Rather sad, it's like those 15 twerps in the rubber dinghy that were, I mean, ours. Come on, she sold the bloodies up to the Sun. I'm convinced she rode out there with a commission from the Sun. And if it's war, I'm older than a lot of you, and so you can't call me cynical, because I've seen a lot of wars, and they all make me more cynical than the last one.
Tell you what, though, our sailors, when they saw that Iranian gunboat coming towards them, they must have felt really nervous, but on the other hand, I bet part of them was thinking, thank God it's not an American one, we'd be dead already.
Kerry, whose weapon of choice will no longer be a net?
Into a net. Oh, this is the US military banning their troops from using MySpace. Yeah. It's a weird story, actually. I kind of understand it, although the US military is saying that the reason behind this is bandwidth, that too many soldiers are going on the internet and it's clogging up the internet. From Iraq, apparently. I think it's more to do with the fact that various soldiers presumably are going onto their MySpace blogs and going, yeah, well, we've got a quiet day tomorrow. We're going to be just at 33 degrees north, 44 degrees east, kicking back, having a barbecue. We're not even taking any guns with us. And as a special treat, the vice president's going to come and hang out. So among the websites they've banned, they've done YouTube and MySpace and all this, there's one called stupidvideos.com. And you just think, good, actually ban that. The image of various US troops blowing up the wrong building and going, oh, did someone get that on camera? We can send that to You've Been Framed.
You can post bulletins on MySpace, and it's like when you're doing something. My daughter's always on there going, I'm going to the shops now, and post a bulletin telling all her mates she's going to the shops, going to bed now. I'd like to have a few American soldiers on there being shot at now. Something just exploded.
I realise how totally unqualified I am to think about war. I don't know what MySpace and YouTube are. In my generation, they gave you a cheese sandwich and a tin hat. And you walk towards anybody who put a verb at the end of the sentence.
Quick supplementary military question, actually. Which principled soldier is not going to war?
Harry.
Oh, this is not fair.
This is not fair?
Why? No, because it's unanswerable.
It's unanswerable.
There's no way of answering it.
We just did, Harry.
It's Harry. That's the answer. It's 1 point to them.
Well, if you want him to go, if you want to cry, God for Harry, England, St George, you'll be closing the wall up with your English dead before you know it, because they're all wearing ginger wigs, and there's this sniper sitting out there who is locked into the royal family. He's been working with them for years. You could send Philip. I wouldn't object.
I'm not going! What's sending me for? They're never going to miss me, are they?
I'm pleased to say that Phil hasn't been sent to Iraq, as he was deemed to be too important a part of Essex's flood defences. We start round two with a notice on the side of a packet of Nivea for Men.
We don't need it. Who sends these things in?
24-hour moisturiser. Applied twice a day. A misplaced candle started a fire that caused $100,000 worth of damage to the Correction Centre, an S&M club in Inner Melbourne. A fire brigade spokesman said 18 firefighters were tied up for some time. But controlled and disciplined firefighting contained the blaze.
12 midnight. Help, my dog's as fat as me. 1 a.m. Kill it, cook it, eat it.
Now, every year, we at the News Quiz like to honour an esteemed public figure, a respected servant of the people who, in the midst of a dull newsweek, can lift us all with a demonstration of their breathtaking incompetence. The competition this year has been stiff, with the Prime Minister himself making a last-minute bid for glory. But our final decision was taken fairly and impartially, with not a whiff of a phone-in vote or ant and deck about it. And so I'm delighted to reveal that the winner of this year's Linda Smith Award for Services to the News Quiz is the original NHS superbug herself, Patricia Hewitt. Phil, which Patsy got away with a confidence trick this week?
My favourite politician, I presume, Patsy Hewitt.
Oh, we love her.
Whose a cunning plan to save the NHS is to patronise people to death. Cut waiting lists straight. Is the most patronising woman in history. She had a vote of no confidence, sadly rejected, but she's upset just about everyone. She's upset the junior doctors, she's upset the nurses, she's upset the midwives. Nobody likes her. It's difficult to feel sorry for junior doctors because some of them are quite posh. And basically, they've had this system where there are 30-odd thousand junior doctors going for three posts because we've increased numbers, but we don't have enough consultant posts for them to go to. And they produced this system, which meant that a ridiculous computer system, which didn't allow for your previous experience or anything you'd done before, it started becoming incredibly leaky. So they actually made a spreadsheet of people's sexual orientation and religion and then released it on the internet next to named doctors. So it said Dr. whatever, Phil Hammond, bisexual atheist.
You heard it here first.
And then doctors could log on and they could change other people's applications. The whole thing leaked and fell to pieces. There was a judicial review this week, which unfortunately the junior doctors lost, but the judge said it was a grossly unfair system. And we're now almost certainly not going to fill posts for August the 1st, which is when doctors take over. So please, please don't get sick in August.
But at least you don't feel strongly about it.
I do feel incredibly sorry, but...
In the court, Patricia Hewitt's lawyers publicly repeated how sorry she is for the uncertainty and anxiety caused to junior doctors, while privately the health secretary wondered if she dare take that burning sensation to the GP yet. Oh, don't you wish it now. Francis, whose fat chance of an operation has gone up in a puff of smoke?
I think this is Patricia Hewitt, who has... She's so wonderful, isn't she? Bless her. She says that fat people and smokers shouldn't be treated on the NHS because they've brought it on themselves. Whatever it is they've got, they've brought it on themselves, and it serves them bloody well right. I so want something to happen to her. The ideal thing would be if she ran to fat, really. We could smuggle a few extra calories into all her meals without her noticing until she just tips the scales at the prohibited weight and then she turns up and see how she gets treated. Failing
that... She nearly ran me over once.
You were asking for it, obviously.
I did think, as she skimmed past me, what are the chances of a health secretary-related injury? I thought they were quite...
There was a lovely headline about Patricia Hewitt on this. It said, Hewitt admits failure on mixed sex pledge. Conjured up a picture that really only Hieronymus Bosch, I think, could probably do justice to it.
They cut it out last year. I shall keep on saying it until they keep it in. What you don't know, Patricia Hewitt is the first wife of James Hewitt and the mother of Prince Harry. That is why she is kept in office. She knows people.
I've heard that.
Yeah, you've heard that.
Yeah.
Legally, we must point out that James Hewitt and Patricia Hewitt were never married, but everything else is true. Allegedly. Our lawyers would also like me to point out that I never actually said that last sentence, and that if you heard me say it, then you've started on the sherry far too early. The News Quiz does very occasionally cause the BBC lawyers to consider heading off on a long canoeing holiday, particularly when the panellists insist on answering questions that we really didn't want to ask them.
We're not doing the Ted Heath story.
No.
Not yet.
No, because we can't afford it. No.
He's dead. God, the BBC's really getting subservient.
Boris Yeltsin's dead and we're doing that.
Aren't we?
Moving on.
I have to say I was very moved by that.
Wait. Mark, for whom has the Iron Curtain gone down for the last time?
I know this. It's Ted Heath.
Yes!
Can I just ring my lawyer? Very good.
Well, presumably it's Boris Yeltsin.
Oh, well done you.
Who indeed was the Ted Heath lookalike champion of the Soviet Union.
He was.
14 years running, yeah.
So this is the Boris Yeltsin story. Yes. He's a man who made himself famous by sort of wandering through Moscow and clambering on a tank and going, right, who wants something? I'll sack you all on. And
then I'm your comrade, I am. Yeah.
Can I just check, are we not doing the story about the men on the Bristol Downs who were having an orgy and got interrupted by an enormous flashlight that firemen shone on them?
Can if you like.
Well, I just think it's rather lovely that we live in an age where the correct response now for being interrupted in your orgy in a bush having sex with lots of strangers is, do you mind?
Andy, whose wedding was a blooming disaster?
I'm just looking at this list of swear words now. So.
Justin, do you know?
I think it's American.
Yes.
Someone had some flowers, and clearly the flowers were either dead or wrong.
You're scraping around for obscure stories about American wedding flowers, just so you don't have to ask a question about the big story of the week, that we're all going to be sacked.
Well, I was trying to save that for a surprise when we have drinks later.
Why can't we have a question about the BBC?
Well, we can have a question about the BBC, if you wish. I can say to you, who's likely to lose their job soon? Francis. Have you got
Corey.
A view, Mark?
Well, Corey... Corey Caulfield over there was in the newspapers this week. It said that this man who chairs the trust... It's in the papers. I think the news is out. Said he told BBC presenters and people to shut up and stop complaining about the fact they're all about to be sacked. And it's not just Humphreys and Paxman. It said there was a letter signed by Charlotte Green, Brian Perkins and Corey Caulfield. And this man, Lyons, is taking the whole lot of them on. Charlotte and Corey and Brian Perkins.
I think
that's fantastic. I'd love to see Corey on a picket line. And here is a list of scabs for this evening.
And that Director General, Mark Thompson, when he made this announcement, he's got this silly stubble. And someone obviously once told him he looked like George Michael, and he believed them. And no one around him has the nerve to say, actually, you look like a bit of a Burke. You look like a door-to-door pubic hair salesman. Bloody well shave it off. Have we been sacked yet?
I've never been troubled by a door-to-door pubic hair salesman. I get students trying to sell their paintings, but I don't know whether I'd be interested.
Do you know
that'd be quite a hard sell, wouldn't it?
I don't know how much trouble we're in this evening, but anyway...
So is the news quiz going to be affected by these sackings then? Is you going to be doing it all on your own, Sandy? And here is the questions. The first one is to myself. Following that, I'll be reading the cuttings and then reading out the scores.
And before we bring you the final, final scores...
Luckily, I don't have to do the news quiz by myself. Otherwise, how would I have found out about President Bush's key-cutting skills, the zoological uses of the Mary Rose, and the complexities of winning a bronze ballroom dancing medal?
Bush has... Everyone says, oh, Bush is a complete moron, which he probably is. But he's got degrees from both Yale and Harvard universities, and fat lot of good.
Yeah, but have you ever... I once tried to find out what his educational qualifications were, and on his website... It says that Mr. President graduated in the top 84% of his class at Yale. That'll be 16% from the bottom.
I think it was a different Yale. I think you went somewhere to learn how to cut keys.
It's been a tough week for the environment, though. The most distressing thing about the Cutty Sark fire for me was the damage that fire did to the environment, particularly as historical artefacts give out more CO2 than things of no real historical interest. So in fact, to offset the environmental damage of the Cutty Sark burning down, they are going to turn the Mary Rose into a hedgehog sanctuary.
Right, so there aren't very many dentist songs. I was 30 or more years ago, I was in a band called Hank Clinton and the Bijou Pervettes. It's true, I was Hank Clinton and the Bijou Pervettes were my backing singers, and our showstopper was this song I'd written, and the opening verse went, "You used to be my own true love. We went together like hand in glove. In the labour of love, we were only just apprenticed. Then you went and ran off with my dentist." And it was a great success.
Where?
I haven't got a pension.
You haven't got a pension?
I haven't got, but people sort of say, oh, God, you've got to make provision for your old age. But I've done that by resolving that I am going to be a burden to people.
Are you going to carry on doing this programme, being a burden to people on this show?
God, yes. Without people who are way past it, where would Radio 4 be?
Gary, Gary, which American import shouldn't be child's play?
Oh, is this the...
Can I just say, we wanted to play the theme tune to a rather fine old children's television programme called Number 73, but were forbidden for copyright reasons. I know.
I've always said what this quiz needs is that when anyone gets an answer right, they should have to make a sandwich.
See? The way forward.
There's a few Number 73 fans. Can you still do the sandwich quiz intro?
Oh, golly. It's 25 years ago. And now the daring, dazzling, death-defyingly dull, devastatingly dangerous, delectable, delicatessenable, divine sandwich quiz. You must have had ballroom dancing when you were a boy, Alan. You must have had...
I was taught to dance by a man called Sergeant Ronga, who was... Sergeant in the parachute... No, I swear to God, on my children's life. He was in the parachute regiment, and when he was demobbed, there wasn't much to do, but he was tremendously light on his feet. I mean, he'd been at Arnhem and all that, but there was no call for Germans to have their necks broken anymore. Ronga then became an instructor at the Woodpecker Pub in Turnpike Lane. And upstairs in the Woodpecker Pub, Humphrey Littleton and Monty Sunshine and Wally Fawkes, the great trog cartoonist, used to practice with their rehearsal rooms, and we danced downstairs, Ronga and I, to an HMV gramophone with Victor Sylvester on it. And when I got my bronze medal in the junior ballroom dancing, my feet didn't touch the ground because he held me, and it was like Donald O'Connor dancing with a mop. And I can feel now holding onto his biceps. They were like shot put biceps. And when the man from the British Federation of Dance turned up, it was just the two of us, just Ronga and me. And he'd been at Aramanche and all these places, and I was there in my maroon blazer and shorts. And this man in a raincoat, rather like Eeyore Wistie, turned up to judge us. And he brought his own records, and these were the days when the 78s were in paper covers. And he said, "I've got these, they're Joe Loss." And Ronga said, "We danced to Victor Sylvester." The bloke from the Institute said, "I'm afraid today we're going to dance to Joe Loss." And Ronga said, "No, we're not." And I stood by in this sort of dancing dispute, and I swear he broke this Joe Loss record. And he put on Victor Sylvester, and I got the medal. But Humph was playing upstairs. I think it was during the tango. Humphrey was playing Bad Penny Blues, and it was very noisy. Cornets, enormously noisy. Very thin wooden floors in this pub. And Ronga said, "I want you to go upstairs and tell him to shut up, because I can't hear Victor." So I went upstairs, and it's amazing, because we became friends much later, and said to Humphrey Littleton, "Would you mind keeping it piss off?" So I went downstairs, and Ronga went upstairs, and it was silent. He came down, and I said, "What did you do?" He said, "I gave him a look." Anyway, that's how I learned to dance.
The late, great Alan Corran, making me and everyone else cry with laughter. As faithful listeners know, no news quiz is complete without what we like to call a silly animal story. So, like a fragrant satsuma nestling in the toe of your Christmas stocking, here are your final furry news quiz treats. Fred, who's been cheating by name and cheating by nature?
The animal world, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Cheetahs. There's been a survey watching cheetahs' behaviour, and they've discovered that the female of the species puts it about a bit. They've discovered by doing DNA tests on the offspring that in one litter, the female had about four or five little cheetahs, and each had a different dad. It's like being in Ulrika Johnson's house.
They are amazing creatures, though, aren't they, cheetahs? I mean, did you know that a female cheetah can run 60 miles per hour on the flats? It's about half that on stilettos, but...
But if they're the fastest animal in the world and also the most promiscuous, there must be a lot of other startled animals out there, because a couple of rabbits with roses in their cheeks, a cheetah's gone, you wouldn't even know, it's been and gone, but the male is slow. I have nothing against these very fast predatory females. I think that's... They've already got a fur coat. I have to do nothing. I just stand there.
They say it's for the evolution of the species. This is why this habit has arisen, which is quite an interesting excuse for infidelity. I do love you, darling, but you have to understand, I have a responsibility to my species.
Fred, whose squeak is now a roar?
A mouse.
A mouse, yes.
The fearless mouse. And there have been several fearless mice over the years, but this particular one is, I think, in Japan, mm-hmm.
And again, it's one of these things that keeps us all awake at night, wondering how mice can be stopped from being afraid of cats. And this Japanese scientist, I assume he's a scientist, he might just be some bloke with too much time in his hands, has discovered how you damage the cells in the mouse's brain so that it doesn't know it's afraid of cats. Something we've been doing in Scotland for years with whiskey. You just, it just damages the right enough cells and you just wander over and say, all right, big man. Even though he's your arch enemy. And it's been a long time since I did my cat impression on the News Quiz, Sandy, so if you'd just bear with me. Oh, no, I need to warm up.
Who's hoping for a howling success north of the border?
Well, I know this because I like wolves, because they're like dogs, only more vicious. They're wicked. This is about
not coming to your house at all.
This is about reintroducing wolves into the wild in Scotland, because I don't know why they died off. I think it will work, but I think it will be very dangerous, because to me it's like saying what we're going to do is that we're going to go to the Forest of Dean and introduce lions. Am I worrying needlessly about wolves?
They're introducing them to kill red deer. Yeah,
they want
they?
To bump off deer, but unfortunately, of course, the wolves won't discriminate. They'll also kill sheep, anything else that comes near them. So,
what if someone's camping?
No, wolves don't kill people.
Do they not?
No.
I bet there was a wolf once that killed a person.
No. I've just read a novel called The Tenderness of Wolves, and it says that wolves don't kill people. I believe it. It is a novel, on the other hand.
Something of a giveaway in the title, then.
Werewolves, on the other hand. I did also see an American werewolf in London many years ago. They can be nasty.
You know what we should... What we should really worry about is elephants, because elephants kill more people every year than any other animal, so I would be dead against introducing elephants to Scotland.
I thought red deer were culled by the gentry. I think we just need to breed more gentry, don't we? William and Harry and the rest of them to get stuck across, because there's plenty of land out there.
Apparently wolves breed faster than the royals. That's the reason.
And more intelligently.
Do you know, that may be why we didn't get a Christmas card from the Queen this year. If there is someone we can rely on to send us posts, it's your good selves. And here are some of our favourite cuttings that you've sent in, read by our panellists.
It says, a Merseyside man suffering from erectile dysfunction went to Turkey to be fitted with an implant, which, when triggered by a small radio transmitter, helps to overcome the problem. Unfortunately, on his return home, he found it was on the same frequency as his neighbour's remote garage door opener.
A mother who had called in television super nanny Jo Frost to help tame her 5 unruly children was left homeless yesterday after one of the youngsters set fire to their house in Witham, Essex. A spokesperson for Essex Fire Service said, someone is going to be sitting on the naughty step for quite some time.
It says, Christopher Dean, one half of the legendary figure skating duo Tourville and Dean, was a guest on BBC Radio 2's Midweek with Libby Purvis yesterday. Referring to the couple getting back together for a tour, Purvis asked, so what about the rekindling of this magical relationship? Is the sparkle still there? Christopher answered, well, it's just like getting back on an old bike.
Mr. Ween.
This is from Mr. K.C. Mellor in Corsham, Wiltshire, where they've just elected a BNP councillor, and there's a report in the local paper of him taking his seat, and a quote from him where he tries to reassure people. He says, the BNP is a party for Indigenous British people. Everyone goes on about us being anti-black, but it's not just blacks who cannot join. Asians, Chinese, Aborigines, Maoris and Eskimos can't join either, but you don't hear them complaining.
Gary.
This is from the Northern Echo. A nationwide search is underway to find a missing field mouse. Sedge, the field mouse, the mascot of Sedgefield Racecourse, County Durham, was last seen 13 months ago competing in the Mascot Grand National at Huntingdon Racecourse. General Manager Jill Williamson said, Sedge is the second major loss for Sedgefield this year. First, our Prime Minister steps down, and now our giant field mouse mascot goes missing.
Alan.
Sandy, this is from the Sheffield Star, and it says, singles, if you reach the point when you think your social life is as boring as it gets,
Come along to Eccles Hall 18 to 30 Club and let us prove you wrong.
So that's it from us for 2007. We'll be back in 2008. But until then, the whole News Quiz team would like to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a dazzling New Year. We leave you with some of our final favourite cuttings.
Derbyshire police have apologised after they sent six-year-old Peter Akers one of a batch of letters giving known criminals one last chance to hand themselves in. It offered him a fresh start if he confessed to his crimes. Peter said that he had recently taken some sweets from his sister's room.
Salad of roast squash and scallops. This simple, colourful dish makes a winning starter, or being a distinctly sexy and indulgent combination, a great lover's supper. Serves four.
Sexually transmitted infections are spreading fast in the United Kingdom. Sex without a condom is seriously risky. We have 120,000 condoms to give away on a first-come, first-served basis.
Eileen Calverley is about to set out on an expedition into the Ethiopian highlands in her role as an ambassador for the charity Send a Cow to Africa.
Appleby Horse Fair organisers have hailed this year's event as one of the best ever, despite 58 people being arrested and a horse drowning on the first day.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz of the Year were Clive Anderson, Joe Brand, Clive Coleman, Justin Edwards, Simon Evans, Dave Gorman, Andy Hamilton, Phil Hammond, Jeremy Hardy, Amanda Iannucci, Phil Jupiters, Shappi Korsandi, Fred McCauley, Caitlin Moran, Sue Perkins, Greg Proops, Carrie Quinlan, Nick Revel, Mark Steele, Francis Ween, Andy Zaltzman and Alan Corran. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by Chris Aldridge, Harriet Cass, Peter Donaldson, Charlotte Green, Rory Morrison, and me, Corrie Caulfield. The whole script was written by Lucy Clark, Roderick Crooks, John Finnimore, Paul Perenza, Simon Littlefield, George Poles, and Danielle Ward. It was produced by Ed Morrish.